Chapter 3, in which Sophie enters into a castle and a bargain. There was a large black door in the black wall facing Sophie, and she made for that, hobbling briskly. The castle was uglier than ever close to. It was far too tall for its height and not a very regular shape. As far as Sophie could see in the growing darkness, it was built of huge black blocks like coal, and, like coal, the blocks were all different shapes and sizes. Chill breathed off these blocks as she got closer. But that failed to frighten Sophie at all. She just thought of chairs and firesides and stretched her hand out eagerly to the door. Her hand could not come near it. Some invisible wall stopped her hand about a foot from the door. Sophie prodded at it with an irritable finger. When that made no difference, she prodded with her stick. The wall seemed to be all over the door from as high as her stick could reach, and right down to the heather sticking out from under the doorstep. "Open up!" Sophie cackled at it. That made no difference to the wall. "Very well," Sophie said. "I'll find your back door." She hobbled off to the left-hand corner of the castle, that being both nearest and slightly downhill. But she could not get round the corner. The invisible wall stopped her again as soon as she was level with the irregular black cornerstones. At this, Sophie said a word she'd learned from Martha, that neither old ladies nor young girls are supposed to know, and stumped uphill and anti-clockwise to the castle's right-hand corner. There was no barrier there. She turned that corner and hobbled eagerly toward the second big black door in the middle of that side of the castle. There was a barrier over that door, too. Sophie glowered at it. "I call that very unwelcoming," she said. Black smoke blew down from the battlements in clouds. Sophie coughed. Now she was angry. She was old, frail, chilly, and aching all over. Night was coming on, and the castle just sat and blew smoke at her. "I'll speak to Howl about this," she said, and set off fiercely to the next corner. There was no barrier there. Evidently you had to go round the castle anti-clockwise. But there, a bit sideways in the next wall, was a third door. This one was much smaller and shabbier. "The back door at last," Sophie said. The castle started to move again as Sophie got near the back door. The ground shook, the wall shuddered and creaked, and the door started to travel away sideways from her. "Oh, no, you don't!" Sophie shouted. She ran after the door and hit it violently with her stick. "Open up!" she yelled. The door sprang open inward, still moving away sideways. Sophie, by hobbling furiously, managed to get one foot up on its doorstep. Then she hopped and scrambled and hopped again, while the great black blocks round the door jolted and crunched as the castle gathered speed over the uneven hillside. Sophie did not wonder the castle had a lopsided look. The marvel was that it did not fall apart on the spot. "What a stupid way to treat a building!" she panted as she threw herself inside it. She had to drop her stick and hang on to the open door in order not to be jolted straight out again. When she began to get her breath, she realized there was a person standing in front of her, holding the door too. He was a head taller than Sophie, but she could see he was the merest child, only a little older than Martha. And he seemed to be trying to shut the door on her and push her out of the warm, lamp-lit, low-beamed room beyond him, into the night again. "Don't you have the impudence to shut the door on me, my boy?" she said.
"I wasn't going to, but you're keeping the door open," he protested. "What do you want?"
Sophie looked round at what she could see beyond the boy. There were a number of probably wizardly things hanging from the beams. Strings of onions, bunches of herbs, and bundles of strange roots. There were also definitely wizardy things like leather books, crooked bottles, and an old brown grinning human skull. On the other side of the boy was a fireplace, with a small fire burning in the grate. It was a much smaller fire than all the smoke outside suggested, but then this was obviously only a back room in the castle. Much more important to Sophie, this fire had reached the glowing rosy stage, with little blue flames dancing on the logs, and placed beside it in the warmest position was a low chair with a cushion on it. Sophie pushed the boy aside and dived for that chair. "Oh, my fortune," she said, and settled herself comfortably in it. It was bliss. The fire warmed her aches and the chair supported her back, and she knew that if anyone wanted to turn her out now, they were going to have to use extreme and violent magic to do it. The boy shut the door. Then he picked up Sophie's stick and politely leaned it against the chair for her. Sophie realized that there was now no sign at all that the castle was moving across the hillside, not even the ghost of a rumble or the tiniest shaking. How odd! "Tell Wizard Howl," she said to the boy, "that this castle's going to come apart round his ears if it travels much further."
"The castle's bespelled to hold together," the boy said, "but I'm afraid Howl's not here just at the moment."
This was good news to Sophie.
"When will he be back?" she asked, a little nervously.
"Probably not till tomorrow now," the boy said. "What do you want?"
"Can I help you instead? I'm Howl's apprentice, Michael."
This was better news than ever.
"I'm afraid only the wizard can possibly help me," Sophie said quickly and firmly. It was probably true, too. "I'll wait, if you don't mind."
It was clear Michael did mind. He hovered over her a little helplessly. To make it plain to him that she had no intention of being turned out by a mere boy apprentice, Sophie closed her eyes and pretended to go to sleep.
"Tell him the name's Sophie," she murmured. "Old Sophie," she added, to be on the safe side.
"That will probably mean waiting all night," Michael said.
Since this was exactly what Sophie wanted, she pretended not to hear. In fact, she almost certainly fell into a swift doze. She was so tired from all that walking. After a moment, Michael gave her up and went back to the work he was doing at the workbench where the lamp stood. So, she would have a whole night's shelter, even if it was on slightly false pretences. Sophie thought drowsily. Since Howl was such a wicked man, it probably served him right to be imposed upon. But she intended to be well away from here by the time Howl came back and raised objections. She looked sleepily and slyly across at the prentice. It rather surprised her to find him such a nice, polite boy. After all, she had forced her way in quite rudely, and Michael had not complained at all. Perhaps Howl kept him in abject servility. But Michael did not look servile. He was a tall, dark boy with a pleasant, open sort of face, and he was most respectably dressed. In fact, if Sophie had not seen him at that moment carefully pouring green fluid out of a crooked flask onto black powder in a bent glass jar, she would have taken him for the son of a prosperous farmer. How odd. Still, things were bound to be odd where wizards were concerned, Sophie thought. And this kitchen or workshop was beautifully cosy and very peaceful. Sophie went properly to sleep and snored. She did not wake up when there came a flash and a muted bang from the workbench, followed by a hurriedly bitten-off swear word from Michael. She did not wake when Michael, sucking his burned fingers, put the spell aside for the night and fetched bread and cheese out of the closet. She did not stir when Michael knocked her stick down with a clatter, reaching over her for a log to put on the fire, or when Michael, looking down into Sophie's open mouth, remarked to the fireplace, "She's got all her teeth. She's not the Witch of the Waste, is she?"
"I wouldn't have let her come in, if she was," the fireplace retorted.
Michael shrugged and picked Sophie's stick politely up again. Then he put a log on the fire with equal politeness and went away to bed somewhere overhead. In the middle of the night, Sophie was woken by someone snoring. She jumped upright, rather irritated, to discover that she was the one who had been snoring. It seemed to her that she had only dropped off for a second or so, but Michael seemed to have vanished in those seconds, taking the light with him. No doubt a wizard's apprentice learned to do that kind of thing in his first week, and he had left the fire very low. It was giving out irritating hissings and poppings. A cold draught blew on Sophie's back. Sophie recalled that she was in a wizard's castle, and also with unpleasant distinctness that there was a human skull on a workbench somewhere behind her. She shivered and cranked her stiff old neck around, but there was only darkness behind her.
"Let's have a bit more light, shall we?" she said.
Her cracked little voice seemed to make no more noise than the crackling of the fire. Sophie was surprised. She had expected it to echo through the vaults of the castle. Still, there was a basket of logs beside her. She stretched out a creaking arm and heaved a log on the fire, which sent a spray of green and blue sparks flying up the chimney. She heaved on a second log and sat back, not without a nervous look or so behind her, where blue-purple light from the fire was dancing over the polished brown bone of the skull. The room was quite small. There was no one in it but Sophie and the skull.
"He's got both feet in the grave, and I've only got one," she consoled herself.
She turned back to the fire, which was now flaring up into blue and green flames.
"Must be salt in that wood," Sophie murmured.
She settled herself more comfortably, putting her knobby feet on the fender and her head into a corner of the chair where she could stare into the coloured flames, and began dreamily considering what she ought to do in the morning. But she was sidetracked a little by imagining a face in the flames.
"It would be a thin blue face," she murmured, "very long and thin, with a thin blue nose. But those curly green flames on top are most definitely your hair. Suppose I didn't go until Hal gets back? Wizards can lift spells, I suppose, and those purple flames near the bottom make the mouth. You have savage teeth, my friend. You have two green tufts of flame for eyebrows."
Curiously enough, the only orange flames in the fire were under the green eyebrow flames, just like eyes, and they each had a little purple glint in the middle that Sophie could almost imagine was looking at her, like the pupil of an eye.
"On the other hand," Sophie continued, looking into the orange flames, "if the spell was off, I'd have my heart eaten before I could turn around."
"Don't you want your heart eaten?" asked the fire.
It was definitely the fire that spoke. Sophie saw its purple mouth move as the words came. Its voice was nearly as cracked as her own, full of the spitting and whining of burning wood.
"Naturally I don't," Sophie answered. "What are you?"
"A fire demon," answered the purple mouth. There was more whine than spit to its voice as it said, "I'm bound to this hearth by contract. I can't move from this spot." Then its voice became brisk and crackling. "And what are you?" it asked. "I can see you're under a spell."
This roused Sophie from her dreamlike state.
"You see," she exclaimed. "Can you take the spell off?" There was a poppling, blazing silence, while the orange eyes in the demon's wavering blue face travelled up and down Sophie.
"It's a strong spell," it said at length. "It feels like one of the Witch of the Wastes to me."
"It is," said Sophie.
"But it seems more than that," crackled the demon. "I detect two layers, and of course you won't be able to tell anyone about it unless they know already."
It gazed at Sophie a moment longer.
"I shall have to study it," it said.
"How long will that take?" Sophie asked.
"It may take a while," said the demon,
and it added in a soft, persuasive flicker,
"How about making a bargain with me?
I'll break your spell if you agree to break this contract I'm under.
Sophie looked warily at the demon's thin blue face. It had a distinctly cunning look as it made this proposal. Everything she had read showed the extreme danger of making a bargain with a demon, and there was no doubt that this one did look extraordinarily evil. Those long purple teeth.
"Are you sure you're being quite honest?" she said.
"Not completely," admitted the demon. "But do you want to stay like that till you die? That spell has shortened your life by about 60 years, if I am any judge of such things."